Welcome to the 335th episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast. Stay tuned for my interview with writer Kelly Harms, author of the novel The Bright Side of Going Dark. If you're new to audiobooks, they're the perfect way to get more books into your busy life. Listen to audiobooks during your commute, while doing chores, walking the dog, or just relaxing at home. All you need is a smartphone and the free Libro.fm app. If you already love audiobooks and don't know what to listen to next, check out recommendations and curated lists from people who know audiobooks best, your local bookseller. Reading and Writing Podcast special offer, get two audiobooks for the price of one with your first month of membership with code RWPODCAST. That's code RWPODCAST for two audiobooks for the price of one for your first month of membership at Libro.fm. Well, welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Kelly Harms, author of the novel The Bright Side of Going Dark. Harms' previous novel, The Overdue Life of Amy Byler, was a Goodreads Choice Award 2019 finalist and a top 10 Amazon bestseller of the year. Kelly, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
If someone listening hasn't heard about The Bright Side of Going Dark yet, how would you describe the novel?
Bright Side is a very quirky book that came out of the time following Amy Byler, which did well, and I'm all too pleased about that. But it also changed how my profile worked in the world in terms of social media, because suddenly I became someone that people actually wanted to reach out to. and that's great. I love hearing from my readers. That has been an absolute treat. What hasn't been such a treat is how my relationship with my phone has changed. And in examining that, and then a couple of other events that happened in my life, I realized that there was a way, although it's very difficult and very nuanced, to settle up my relationship with my tech. And it has really improved my life. And it continues to grow. So when in writing about Bright Side, I wrote about two sides of the tech window. An influencer who is on her Instagram constantly updating, getting sponsorships, making a living out of the work. And then a photo screener or a safety and standards screener, as they're sometimes called, who's sitting on the other end of the screen deciding what's appropriate and what's not for the public to see at large. This is very much in the news right now, and it is a very complicated issue.
And so I take by that that you've read some of the articles about the Facebook, screeners or content moderators. And
definitely. Kind of— I fell down a wonderful research hole on that, learning about what their lives are like in different countries and then what it's like here and the kind of mental health toll that it takes.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying.
It is. And I'm obviously the writer of lighter fiction. So I took at it from a viewpoint of one woman's experience who already has existing mental health troubles. And that really let me dig into a woman's experience that, while still sort of dipping a toe in the larger problem here. So you'll hear a little bit about cyberbullying, about indecency, but this isn't the book where I take on, for example, fact-checking on Facebook. That is maybe someday. It's a big topic, I still want my readers to have fun and be a little escapist here, and I wrote the book that I needed to read for the phone situation that I was in the moment. So
do you have someone who runs your social media for you?
I work with other people, but I do the content production myself. And it is quite time consuming. It's also very rewarding at times. But I use it in this very conscious way. which is to say, most of the year, it's for sharing what I'm reading with other people, elevating other authors, or just being a human person and showing my humanity. So you're not going to see that I baked the most beautiful cake in the world or the perfect loaf of sourdough bread on my feed. You're going to see the reality that's a little bit messier than that. And also, I have a really cute dog.
It never hurt.
Never hurt, right? And then at the same time, I did need help to do the interactions and to keep up with people sort of adding you, so to speak. Adding means tagging you. And you want to be positive about it, but people tag you whether you want to be in a conversation or not. So and sometimes it's awesome and you love it. And I definitely hope that I let those people know. And then sometimes you're like, wait, did you just tag me to tell me you hated my book? And so and that doesn't happen that often, but when it does, it's the sort of social media equivalent of somebody coming over, ringing your doorbell and shouting at you. So you do need help to stand between you and that onslaught.
Sure. So do you go dark from social media and technology in your own life?
Yes, I do. And the first experience was actually while writing this book, I went dark because I was in the hospital. And I realized that when that happened, the people that I sort of touch, so to speak, every day via technology or conversation or walking or whatever, those people obviously knew exactly what was going on with me. But the people who you don't, so to speak, touch or who the interaction doesn't go both ways had no clue. And obviously when I was sick in the hospital, my phone was the last thing I cared about. So during that time, it really helped me center in how very different our in real life or on the phone relationships are from our likes in quotation marks and our friends in quotation marks.
Sure. So what are your earliest memories of reading in books?
Oh, gosh, they go so far back. I vividly remember I had a little trouble learning to read, and I was bribed with a Care Bear watch to get through, I think it was Go Dog Go. And that must have been highly effective because I don't feel like I've ever stopped reading since. But our house is full of books. I grew up in a house that just I don't even know how to describe. Well, I guess I can say my mom is a librarian, so you know all you need to know right there. Right. So books have always been important to everyone in our family. But I was definitely the lightest reader of anyone, and I read the same things over and over and over again. So the Little House books and the Jane Austen and what I call my feelings oeuvre, all the Anne of Green Gables books, just all the things that were Judy Blume, just sort of moving me through my developmental stages.
And so what was the path to publication like for you in writing and publishing and getting your first novel published? Had you always wanted to be a writer before that? What was that like for you?
No, what happened is I took a wrong turn on the way to med school and ended up doing an internship. And then from there, I actually got into the book business itself. So I did work in the book business for some time. And one day I was sitting in a meeting, and it was at a time where we were thinking about relocating to be closer to my family. Because at the time, New York was the only place to do the job, it felt like. So it hadn't really ever occurred to me that I could do anything in books without living in New York. But at the same time, I very badly was ready to move back to the Midwest. So for personal reasons, family, and because we were getting ready to start our own family and wanted to be close to the grandparents. So I was just sitting in a meeting, and I had just read a book that I felt was really special and sort of inspired me in that it was getting away with being very different. And I, up until then, I had been told by my seniors that funny women writers weren't really in demand and there wasn't really a place for them in the market. And then when I saw this book start to work, I just felt like a door opened and I walked through it. So when I got to Madison, I wrote this book, the first one, and it sold, I think, it went to auction while I was actually in labor with my son. So it went, it was easier because I was well connected at that point. And I'm just going to be totally honest that anytime I hear the word overnight success applied to me, I just roll my eyes because I worked in the industry for a decade, meeting people and learning how things work. And that was my MFA, so to speak.
And so what was your writing process like for The Bright Side of Going Dark? Do you outline extensively or do you write more organically? What's that process like for you?
At this point, I do some outlining. I really enjoy a book called Take Off Your Pants, which is about going from being a pantser to a plotter. And I'm still a pantser in my soul in as much as I give myself a lot of free rein. But I did start using some major beat structure so that because of time, essentially it came down to time. When I'm trying to write a book a year, I need to know where I'm going because I don't have endless editing and fiddling around time. So, or if I do have it, I'm using it to get my book to the next level, not just to meet the, major beats of the story itself. So yes, Bright Side had some beats mapped out. I had a really good idea of where I wanted the book to go. Of course, once I got to know the characters better, they did not care about my beats and they just went off in their own directions. But because I think I have a lot more conversance now than I used to with the shape of a book of a Kelly Harms book, I was able to keep the shape while letting the characters really do what they were going to do. And the book got really long, interestingly. I mean, even though this is the fastest book I've ever written, it just got longer and longer. It's totally true that I did not have time for brevity.
So given your experience in the industry and working, I'm assuming you worked as an editor?
Mm-hmm. And an agent.
I'm curious, what has been the publishing process like for you? Do you think it's good that you have this knowledge and are able to kind of advocate for yourself knowing how the industry works?
Well, knowing how the sausage gets made isn't always good. It can be really limiting when you think, oh, that'll never sell, that won't work, such and such these rules. Those rules don't service you. And when you're trying to be creative, the last thing that you want is your internal editor to have any extra information. You just want to be.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Her to be quiet or him to be quiet. So that's the downside to it. The upside is it gives you so much permission because when I was sitting on the other side of the desk, I was inundated with queries all the time and I knew what was out there and I knew that somebody had the chutzpah, somebody times 100 had the chutzpah to write an entire book and just believe in themselves and try it. And so I knew that the stories that we tell ourselves that nobody will want your book or that that it's impossible to break out, I knew all that stuff was hooey and that there were people out there at desks praying for something good to come across their table. So I think that gave me a lot of extra oomph.
And so you just mentioned this internal editor and kind of knowing the market and things coming to mind as you're trying to be creative. Are there any tricks that you learned of trying to turn off that internal editor?
Well, it's a process, right? Because whatever works for one book may not work for the next book. When she's loud and she's deafening, I end up sort of, as woo-woo as it sounds, I sort of say directly to that person or that voice, I say, look, I know you're worried that I'm going to fail and be embarrassing, but I cannot edit a blank page. So please just let me put something down. And I constantly promise myself I'll fix this later. And half the time when I go back, it's just not as bad as I thought it was while I was writing. And half the time it is, but you can't fix a blank page. And so I give myself the gift of something to edit in the first place every time that I sit down. And I have enough faith from doing these five books now that the editing will get there. And if it doesn't, you have a drawer book, life goes on. But, you know, if you're happy with your characters, and if ultimately the characters have a question that they need you to answer for them over the course of the book, then I always say, well, just keep writing because you still need to solve these problems. The Bright Side is a perfect case in point. I started it thinking that I had no place for influencers in my life, that they were just making me feel bad, that social media was just dragging the world down. I came out of it with a very different, much more nuanced understanding, as my characters taught me that there was a time and a place for everything, and that that nothing is as it seems on your tiny little screen that you carry around in your pocket, so to speak.
Sure. So, given your knowledge of the industry, and as I mentioned earlier, your previous novel, The Overdue Life of Amy Byler, was quite a success, top 10 seller on Amazon. If you are not thinking creatively, or not in that creative mode, is it possible for you to analyze the success of The Overdue Life of Amy Byler and what you were able to accomplish there in terms of sales?
Well, I will say that nobody saw it coming, I think, except maybe my agent. She's a brilliant genius, or she's just very dog-headed. I like her either way. But she knew there was something special there. And I wrote that book from a place – it's about a single mother. I'm a single mother. I wrote it from a place of love and intimacy with the subject. And I think there are a lot of women who felt seen when I said out loud some of the things that we are all feeling. And, you know, similarly with Bright Side, talking about the love-hate relationship that we have with tech right now, the letters I get are just really clear that people feel that, how do I say this best? I think that people feel that some of the things that we're most hooked on, whether it's mother guilt or feeling less than when we scan our Instagram feeds, or that we know that we don't want to be doing those things, and yet we're kind of in a cycle. So when I talk about that stuff, people are ready to hear it. And then when you talk about it in a fun way and you give yourself a great story and you're having fun when you're writing, then I think that's probably a sign that things are going to work. But again, I have no idea. There's a little doubt. Because, you know, there's a lot of really fun books out there. They don't always find their audience. And it's the sort of thing where you just keep going. You just keep writing the books until the one that comes along and connects with people, you know, just lands in the right magical place with the right cover and the right editorial team. Because, oh my gosh, the editorial on my books is so detailed, and I work with two different editors to get them where they need to go. And my agent helps with it. And so there's it's not really just up to an author to decide which one's going to be the one that's magical. Sorry, that's
no. I mean, and I think there. I mean, I actually worked for an agency for 3.5 years in the 90s, and have worked at bookstores, et cetera. And I think you know, there's an element of word of mouth that publishers can't. I mean, you know, that you can't figure that out. I mean, you can do advertising and you can do social media promotion, but you can't make someone tell their friend, wow, you've got to read this book.
That is totally true. And and you all know, like when you finish a book and the last few chapters are like just, it's like an urgency when you're just rushing through them, but you're also just pained knowing you're coming to the end of the book and you're having that experience with a book. When that happens, it's so rare and so special that people just sort of tell everyone they know. And on Bookstagram, which is the sort of subculture of Instagram that's really focused on talking about reading, this book, Amy Byler, connected with a lot of people. And as a result, I actually dedicated Brightside to the Bookstagrammers because I wanted them to know that they are very much seen in a more nuanced way than their feeds might suggest.
Sure.
And so, I mean, I'm grateful because mostly social media isn't used to share offline projects. So there's this place that you can come and spend half an hour, set your timer. And then when you leave, you've got a new stack of books. You feel like you're in a community. It's really great. I mean, like I said, it's nuanced. And that's my favorite thing about it.
Sure. So what writing advice would you offer for listeners who are writing their own stories and novels?
I say the same thing that I think everyone should say, which is to read and read widely. If we all assume that we know and have been told to sit in a chair and write every day, and that's not working for you, then it's okay to be a little kind to yourself and say there are seasons of life. Like coronavirus quarantine is not a season of life where a lot of us have extra time, especially if you have kids at home. And we beat up on ourselves. Like, I didn't write today. I don't deserve to enjoy my day or what have you. And I know there's a tendency for us authors to go out and say, like, I write every single day, which I usually do, but that's a practice like running. I didn't start out running 8 miles a day. You sort of shuffle along a pavement for a while. So during those shuffling moments of your life, whether you've got the proverbial shin splints of writing or whether you are suddenly, instead of being a mom with supports in place, suddenly you're a parent who's got people in the room with you at all times talking to you, asking you what you're doing and telling you that they're bored, even though they're cool kids. When those things happen, it's okay to just say, okay, this is the time for me to fill the well because nothing's coming out of there. And those are the times that you get out books and not the same books you read all the time. Never has there been a better time to read outside your lived experience, because when you do that, not only do you lend credence to other people's lived experience, but it also gives you permission to be who you truly are as an author and not be just busy trying to force yourself into existing genre profiles. So read, and then read Black books, and read books by women if you're a man, and read from outside your experience. Read translations, and that's what will refill your well.
Great. Well, on that note, what novels or nonfiction books have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Oh my gosh, I read so much usually, and then I've slowed down a little bit due to the homeschooling schedule. But My Sister the Serial Killer is my favorite read of the last month in terms of page turning, sui generis, really fun, but cool, but smart, but stylish. And so I really recommend that to everybody. It's the author's last name is Braithwaite. And then the other book that I'm reading with my son right now is How to Be an Anti-Racist by Tiffany Jewell. I can't recommend it enough in the nonfiction department. And it is a young adult companion, but it really can be made suitable for every age, adult to young child. And so those are the ones I would say to grab right away. And of course, Bright Side of Going Dark is a good one to grab if you're listening in.
Sure. So where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your books?
I'm on my website, and there's a way to contact me directly. And that's the best way to go because there's nobody standing between you and my inbox. And then
you sure
that
you
said,
want to say that?
Well, that can change if you make a wrong move. But for now, that's the case. I love hearing from my readers, and I write back to everyone, though it can take months, to be honest. But that's me writing back, not an assistant. And then I also can be found at kelly.harms on Insta. And then if you want to be on Facebook, I don't know why, but there I am in a group called Bloom. And if you look it up under Facebook groups, Bloom, all are welcome to talk to me and my fellow authors about everything book related. It's a very fun place to be. It's the only reason I still use and love Facebook. So check it.
Great. Great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Kelly Harms, author of the new novel, The Bright Side of Going Dark. The novel is available now, so go buy a copy. And Kelly, thanks for doing this interview.
It's been my pleasure. Write, everybody, and read and have fun. This is a hard time in our nation. And the work that you do outside of your home, you replenish that energy when you take care of yourself with a good book and a cup of tea.
That's great advice. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jeff. It's been a pleasure.
It has. This was fun.